This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
You're listening to a Joycast from GLBTIQ community radio station, Joy 94.9.
Yes, good afternoon, 1:05. Get your cocktail shakers out, get those little umbrellas out, crush up some ice, slice yourself some lime. We're having an hour of cocktails here on, well, the only station you want to be on for the next 55 minutes, because it's all about getting some booze in your belly, some very, very good cocktails, and some of the best artisans who make them. Stick with me, we're going to have some fun. Yes, we are talking cravings, because that's what we do every Saturday, 1:05. Hello, Pete Dillon. Actually, 1:06. I lied to you. No, it just turned 1:07. I continue to lie to you. It is a very glorious sunny afternoon in Melbourne, and there is nothing more joyful in this city than to go and sit on a rooftop, a beer garden, somewhere warm, sunny, and particularly pleasant, and have a cocktail. So today's show is devoted to that very pursuit, to the drinking of cocktails. And we're going to be looking at two events for the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. One is a Melbourne cocktail event that's being put together by a fellow who could be, in some sense, considered my competition. His name is Cam Smith. He's from Triple R, does a show called Eat It on Sunday at Midday. He copied me, although he's been on air for 16 years longer. He still copied my idea. So Cam Smith has sent in his deputy, who is the Bartender of the Year, no less, the Melbourne Bartender of the Year. I believe he's on a tram on his way in. He should have been here by now. I hope he's got a note from his mother. His name is Sebastian Rayburn, and he'll be joining us. He does a little bit of work with 666 Vodka as well, which leads me to my next event. There is an event called Liquid Harvest, which is happening also as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, combining three of my favourite drinks. Vodka from 666, made in Tasmania, so beautiful Australian vodka. Tequila Tromba, Australian tequila. And actually, no, Mexican tequila, made by Australian boys. We'll call it Australian. We're claiming it. And from the very lovely West Winds Gin, we're going to speak to Jeremy, who's very much a part of that Liquid Harvest event. So two Melbourne Food and Wine Festival events. I have a man in the studio who is known for, well, he's created himself a little bit of a signature. It's called the Jack in the Box. Some of you may be familiar with a little beverage called a pickleback. This man slings picklebacks like no other. He is known as the Maestro. His name is Adam Sherritt, and it is my pleasure to introduce him. So how are you?
Oh, I'm fabulous. How are you?
I'm very well and pleased to have you in the studio to help steer me through this hour, no less. And finally, we will be speaking to a young man who last week made history. It's not often I can say that on this program without involving somebody being arrested, but yes, he made history last week when he created the world's most expensive cocktail. It was a Guinness World Record attempt, at which I believe he was successful. We shall know more. He can probably tell us a little more. It involved some, a bit of brandy, a bit of chartreuse, a bit of Grand Marnier, splash of bitters, and sold for the princely sum of $12,500. I got that right, $12,500. Adam, it's almost absurd to think that somebody would pay $12,500 for a cocktail.
I don't think it's almost absurd. I think it is completely absurd that someone paid $12,000.
What's the most expensive cocktail you ever consumed that you paid for?
That I've paid for?
Yeah.
Ooh. Probably mistakenly paid $20 for a gin martini. All because I made the fancy upgrade to Hendrix.
Only $20.
That's about it. Yeah.
Oh.
I'm a man of simple means.
Ah, yes. Very good. Very good. I also am a man of simple means, but I have been known to pay a bit more than that. I think...
How about yourself? What's the most expensive you have been?
Look, I know that I went and spent an evening at the Gin Palace once. And, it was a pre-dinner. I went for pre-dinner drinks with a buddy of mine. And I know that we walked away having spent a considerable amount of money, waddled our way from the Gin Palace, which is just here near the Joy Studios, into Chinatown to have some Chinese food. And I remember looking at a credit card bill some days later going, "Ooh, any wonder I was over-refreshed when we got to dinner." Which brings me to our next guest, who is in the studio. He has made it off the tram. He is, of course, the bartender of the year. He was the man behind 1806, just around the corner here on Exhibition Street, Russell Street. His name is Seb Rayburn. Hello, sir.
Good afternoon.
Welcome back.
Better. Just made it.
Did you bring a note?
No, but I brought some vodka, so that's...
thank God.
And we'll just play some music now until 2 o'clock when the boys from Fender Bender will come in and entertain you. We can't open that in the studio, I'm afraid. Much to my chagrin, I give you that hint. If one of the technical people walk past, I will be sorely whipped and not in a good way.
We'll make you a little...
Yeah, we can make something outside that I can have while we're playing songs. So today is all about the cocktail. So we will speak to Jeremy soon. We'll get Joel Heffernan on the blower as well to talk about the world's most expensive cocktail. Sebastian, what is the most you've ever paid for a cocktail? Because you're a bit of a maestro.
Many years ago, I do know that me and a friend finished work early on a Friday, and we got paid on Thursdays, and the two of us spent the lot. So that was a big night.
Tens of dollars on cocktails.
Yeah, there was a lot. So
sorry, hospitality wages are not that high.
That was a tough rent week.
I'm sure it was. So with the coins you had left after the big night, because I'm assuming there's always gold coins after big night.
It was a walk home, let me put it that way.
Put them into the poker machine and see if you can make your rent back. We don't encourage any of that behaviour, of course, here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. Everything in moderation. We're going to come back very shortly and talk cocktails, because there's a lot of cocktails we have to get through. And, of course, there is only one musical interlude that we could have as part of this hour. The three songs I've chosen, we might only get to two, but they are in fact the from the soundtrack of the movie Cocktail with Tom Cruise and Brian Brown. That we'll have some messages and we'll come back and play the very first of those, which should have you, well, happy with your Hoover at least if you're at home doing the housework. It's 13 minutes past one here on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, I'm Manny Fidel and you are with Pete Dillon on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Yes, you are here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, where it is 17 minutes past one and we are having happy hour. We're talking cocktails. Sebastian's already brought out a shaker and some... And if anybody's listening, there's no liquid in the studio. He's just brought out a shaker and creating something crazy that we're going to get involved with at the end of the show. Also in the studio, the maestro, Adam Sherritt, who is the master of the pickleback... Sorry, the jack-in-the-box, which is a variation of the pickleback. We're going to get to that in a little while. But on the phone, we have a young man who last week made some history by creating the world's most expensive cocktail. It was a Guinness World Record. It involved 60 mils of cognac that I believe was an 1858. He'll correct me if I'm wrong. His name is Joel Heffernan. Joel, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Good to talk to you, mate. I've got to say hello to Adam and Seb. They're in the studio with me.
Gentlemen, how are you?
How are you?
Hello, sir.
Now, Seb, do you know Joel?
We've probably had a drink together.
Yeah, most likely, yeah, over God. A bar. Yeah.
In my world, that's having a relationship of some description or another.
I think in our world it's inevitable.
Yes, it is. Joel, let's talk through this. First of all, how did you decide that you wanted to create a Guinness World Record and make the world's most expensive cocktail? How did that all come into your mind?
It wasn't myself personally that, I guess, started the ball rolling. It was through a relationship with Quaze and Crown, obviously, and Quaze being a company that a little lesser known than the big powerhouse brands. They wanted to, I guess, launch themselves into Australia. So I think these things kind of hand in hand with their getting exposure and stuff. So.
Right. How long did it take you to create the recipe or come up with the recipe for a $12,500 cocktail?
The recipe itself kind of came from the idea that we wanted to, I guess, make more of a story than just three expensive things put together. I think watching previous record holders, it was either that they just put a diamond in it, or that they found the most, I guess, exclusive or oldest ingredients, and then that was it. So we really wanted to have a story and a, I guess, something to give it validity of why it's actually expensive, not so much just that it is just expensive.
So tell us the story about, it's called the Winston.
Correct, yes. So when we were discussing or thinking about the cognac itself, we wanted to pay homage to, I guess, what makes the cognac special. So the grapevine, or the grape variety that's used in the cognac, is a Folie Blanche grape variety, so it's not generally used today, or pretty much almost is extinct today due to a phylloxera plague in the 1900s. So we wanted to create
that pesky bloody phylloxera.
Yeah. Sorry?
I said that pesky bloody phylloxera.
Yes, yeah. So it is quite unique. I mean, you don't have many examples of vintages lasting this long. So we wanted to recreate a grapevine in a cocktail, basically. So there's earth, there's grapevine, there's drink to represent the grape. And that's, I guess, the story that led us to the ingredients, not the other way around.
Very good. Now, you used, was it an 1858 Croisé cognac?
Correct, yeah. 1858 Croisé Cuvée Lyonnais is the vintage. The same vintage was consumed by Eisenhower and Winston Churchill when they were planning D-Day. So that's where the name kind of spawned from, was what it's referring to.
Yep. And this particular cognac sold for $100,000+?
$157,000 USD. It actually holds the Guinness World Record for the most expensive bottle sold at auction.
Right, so you got this ingredient. What you then came up with some other ingredients to mix with this, because it's not just a glass of cognac. The other three ingredients, I believe, Angostura bitters, which is, you know, everyday old bitters that we put into a lemon,
my
lime, and bitters.
My favourite.
And then a particular type of chartreuse.
Chartreuse VEP, which is a prolonged style of chartreuse. So it's, it's yellow citrus, so it's slightly sweeter, very strong in things like angelica and stuff like that. But it's quite a nice liqueur, and it, in very small quantities, it didn't overpower the cognac. It was supposed to make it a little, you know, excited a bit. So,
Sebastian, what is chartreuse made of?
Well, a bunch of herbs that they keep extremely secret. Three people in the world know the recipe, and they're not allowed to travel
together.
So it's
just a herby thing.
It's the ultimate herby thing is probably the best description.
Okay. Sorry, now you may continue with the other ingredients, which I believe is a Grand Marnier.
Grand Marnier Quintessence, which is their premium Grand Marnier. It was intentional. Everything is French artisanal. So we were really pushing that idea of French history, French tradition.
Right. Now, would I be correct in saying that Grand Marnier is simply a brand name of something called Curaçao?
Of what, sorry?
Curaçao?
Yeah, it's a cognac style Curaçao, similar. Yeah, it's macerated in, well, that specific cognac is actually, it does utilize cognacs pre-1900, so it was all kind of going hand in hand, and, you know, complementary flavors. So it is an orange liqueur, per se.
Right. There is a certain amount of celebrity that has come with this, Joel Heffernan, and you are only a young man, according to my reckoning. I was standing there watching you, and I wondered whether you're actually legally able to serve alcohol. and I did say that to one or two of my friends there at Club 23 at Crown when this event was taking place. And is he old enough to actually be making this business? How do you become, because what, you would be what, 23 maybe?
I'm actually 27.
Oh, well, you're holding it together very, very well.
thank you. Clean living, I guess.
You're a cocktail mixer, for heaven's sake. how did you become this? Now, I used the term on Twitter yesterday when I was talking about you, a mixologist, and was sorely shot down and asked, can we not use that wanky term? So we shall not use that wanky term anymore.
Thank you.
A master of cocktails, I think, is quite appropriate. How did you become interested in the field? And is it a scientific thing for you, or is it simply about having fun?
I think it was a combination of both. I haven't been bartending that long. I've only been bartending 3 years. So I guess the rise to a point like this has been rather quick. 3 years ago, I was bartending at a dive club, so it's kind of interesting to get here. But I always found it just interesting that there's a lot to learn, and I'm still kind of learning. So I guess that's what kind of keeps me going. But I just enjoy that I'm not sitting in an office, really.
Well, there is a lot to be said for that. Look, Joel, really happy to have been able to talk to you. Congratulations on the unconfirmed as yet Guinness World Record.
Correct, yeah.
When do you find out, when do you get your little certificate and your sash and your tiara from Guinness?
I think in about a month, hopefully. So okay. we'll see.
When you've got it, come back in and we'll have a bit of a look at it and a bit of a further talk about it here and see what is in fact next. Are you going to try and beat your own world record?
I'm not sure. I've heard there's some rumours going around that some other people are trying to beat it themselves.
Well, so. You beat the last one by about $4,000, so I think you're fairly safe just for the little while. So congratulations, sir, and go and bask in your own glory.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. You. That is Joel Heffernan. He is from Crown, from the venue up the road that can probably afford to do this, I think, guys, is the thing. The guy who purchased the cocktail had a couple of sips. So I was actually there whilst all this was being done, signing stat decks to say it was actually correct. He had a couple of sips of the cocktail and then left.
Does that mean you got a taste?
No, they made us a cocktail of... similar ingredients.
But
not with that particular 1858 cognac. And for somebody who drinks reasonably frequently, as I am wont to do, it actually gave me a bit of a kick.
Oh, nice.
It was quite good. Look, we'll come back and talk about some events that you boys are involved with, and we will find out what, in fact, is a jack-in-the-box or what is a pickleback from the maestro Adam Sherritt, because he's a bit of a superstar at making these, and I can attest to their goodness as well. We'll have some messages, and then we'll another song from the cocktail soundtrack. This is one you'll know, and I expect you will be singing along to in your car on the way to IKEA. It is, of course, Kokomo by the Beach Boys on after these messages here on Cravings on Joy 94.9, 27 minutes past one.
Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Merci beaucoup, Monsieur Gatte. You are listening to Cravings here on Joy 94.9. 27 minutes to two already. We have gone through half this show and I've barely spoken to these two lovely boys in the studio, Sebastian Rayburn, bartender of the year, no less, and Adam Sherritt, the maestro, who is here from, well, currently works at Feldman's, but you've been around, Mr. Sherritt.
I get around.
Your accent,
like the Beach Boys.
Oh, well, that was chosen for you. I give you that from the, of course, from the soundtrack to the movie Cocktail. Your accent would suggest that you are North American.
Great guess. Not Canadian, by any means.
Well, that's why I went North American, because if you make that mistake, you get stabbed with a pencil.
Yeah, well, it's like Australians and Kiwis, you know?
Yeah, that's scary, Sebastian, is it not?
Yeah. Anyway.
You've come from fairer climes. You've come to Australia. Why?
It was kind of a random, fortuitous moment.
Did you come chasing a woman?
No woman. Maybe that elusive Australian tequila you mentioned at the opening.
Ah, right.
I was just kind of in I was living in San Diego and I just thought, I want to try something different. And out of the blue, a text comes through from one of my closest mates here. And she's just like, come to Melbourne. You'll love it. I went, okay, done. So that was it. Rest is history.
Didn't take much to persuade you at all.
Yeah.
Talk me through a pickleback, because a pickleback is known, and you've created a version of the pickleback.
Yeah. Basically, pickleback is probably the ultimate barman's drink. You know, it's like...
Hang on, before we go, Sebastian, have you had a pickleback?
Many.
Yeah.
So do you know what a jack-in-the-box is?
I'm not sure.
Okay. You're about to find out.
Yeah, so basically the pickleback was, for those of you that don't know... origins are pretty much traced to the Bushwick Country Club in Williamsburg, New York. And that's kind of where the term was developed, but it's basically a shot of Jameson and then a shot of pickle juice. And basically the acids kill that really harshness of the whiskey.
And for those who've not had one, they're bloody lovely. I mean, they're really fabulous. Delicious. I mean, it sounds totally wrong, but...
You can't say bloody lovely.
Yeah, they're really...
terribly British. Oh, bloody lovely.
Right, good.
Jolly, raw drink.
Right. So, basically, what I like to do with drinks, and like anyone, just play a little bit and change it up. And so, instead of Jameson, like for what we call the Jack in the Box, instead of Jameson, it's Maker's Mark. It's an all-American thing. So you go Maker's Mark, pickle juice... and a shot of Bloody Mary, which we make a house Bloody Mary mix that includes a lot of secret things. It's not as extensive as a $12,000 cocktail. I'd love to say it has, I'd love to say it has the tears of Leonardo da Vinci and ground up unicorn antlers and stuff. But no, it's just like, yeah, it's salt, pepper, basil, you know, obviously tomato juice and a few other little things we throw in. But basically what happens
Tabasco,
is you do...
Worcestershire standard business.
Cholula, yeah, wine, beer.
All in the Bloody Mary.
Oh, yeah. It's funny, when I make the Bloody Mary, our Italian pizza chefs, they look at me and they're like, what? Are you making Napoli sauce? Yeah. It's great. It goes over really well. And they kind of freak out and they look at me when I'm doing it. And I'm mashing and shaking and stirring. And they're just going, what is this pizza sauce you're making? And so basically you do all three of those in a row. You do the makers, the pickle juice, and the shot of Bloody Mary mix. And basically what happens is you get the smoke of the whiskey, the, you know, that pickly vinegary flavor, and then you finish it off with like all that savory saltiness, and it literally tastes like you just took a bite of a burger.
Fantastic.
Yeah, it's magnificent.
And basically, yeah, so you do that, and so the term Jack in the Box comes from A, the element of surprise, B, there's a really legendary burger joint in California, so I have to give a shout out to all my California friends. And that was it. I could have called In-N-Out, but I think that's severely overused. And then there's the Out and Out, but that's over at the Beaufort. That's
I'm surprised there was no mention of any of Corey Feldman's roles, because this is, you make this at
yes.
Feldman's in Fitzroy,
yeah,
which is where you're currently a slinging picklebacks.
We toyed about the idea of like the Donatello or something, because that hasn't you know, we've basically played out, I think, every character that Corey Feldman has played at the restaurant except for all the softcore porn
stuff
he did later on via
do that outside the restaurant or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, that'll be my next round of shots.
That's all coming up in Adam Sherritt's book. Sebastian, now you're involved with two events. One, we sort of got you here to talk about, that you're doing with my competitor, if you will, Cam Smith, from Triple R, does a show called Eat at Midday on Sunday, very similar to this program, and that's being done in a rather unusual spot. Where is the Cocktails of Melbourne dinner happening?
Yeah, it started as a bit of a slightly drunken conversation, and
with Cam Smith. No, yeah. It did not.
Absolutely.
What a suggestion.
And that led to chatting with the people at the State Library of Victoria, and they really liked what we wanted to do and said, let's do it in Queen's Hall, which is, if you look at the State Library from the front, behind those incredible columns and windows, that's Queen's Hall behind there.
Wow.
So we're going to be sitting down for dinner and five courses each match.
Five courses,
yeah.
And they're matched to a cocktail rather than wine. I really like this idea. When is it?
It's on the 5th and the 7th of March as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine
Beautiful.
Festival.
Beautiful. Starting at 7 o'clock?
Starts at 7 and finishes around 11:30.
Late. Yeah. Yes,
and
finishes late.
They're also keeping the Gusto exhibition open a little later on those nights. So you can go and check out the exhibition down there at the library and then come up and enjoy some drinks from the era.
And, of course, a very good friend of ours, Hilary McNevin, who will be hosting this show in a couple of weeks while I'm away presenting at Melbourne Food and Wine Festival. So she'll be coming to... She's being dragged from the Interchange bench to take up my spot, and she's very much involved with the Gusto exhibition at the State Library, which people really should get in and see. Sorry, Adam, I
was just going to say, does the State Library have a liquor license?
Well, they must have.
Yeah,
because
really,
yeah, it's a library.
I shouldn't have been there since the
1850s.
Really get a bloody drink at the library.
You know? I shouldn't imagine you could go in there with a snifter of brandy and sort of sit around and read Jack Kerouac
so
or something.
So if you do want to have an event at the State Library, the first thing you have to do is that you go into a meeting where they explain how many staff, library staff, you will need to employ to be there to maintain the integrity of the heritage space. So on that note... Don't sort of walk in with a drink, because they have staff ready to stop you.
And they will pounce.
They will. That's their job. They've got to maintain it.
Integrity maintenance on their jackets.
When we asked them about the cracking the bullwhip in there, they had all... Anyway, that's a whole other story.
Yeah, it is. That's for
You'll have
to
come
the
to the dinner if you want to find out about
now,
it.
Now, this is sort of talking through the history of Melbourne, or Melbourne's Epicurean history, over five courses in 150 years. So from a mud hut, basically, to the fancy room at the State Library.
Yeah.
So how are you telling that story in Cocktail?
Well, the first thing that everyone missed out on is that Melbourne was globally recognised as a cocktail capital back in the 1860s and 1870s. There's places in London and New York that make cocktails that were sort of in the Melbourne style. There's newspaper articles that talk about it. So because of the incredible influx of different people from all over the world.
Well, we were built on the back of immigrants and convicts.
That's
so,
right. And and so much money, you know, was the other thing. So all of this came together to make this incredibly vibrant culture that not only was vibrant in Melbourne, but people going away back out of Melbourne, back to the rest of the world, taking these stories and this information. So it was,
and I guess these recipes with them.
Yeah. And we've tracked a lot of these recipes down.
Probably with the help of the wonderful team at the State Library, I should assume.
Yeah, and through a portal called Trove that the library operates, where you can do searches of old newspapers, and it's invaluable. You have to do some quite interesting searches because it doesn't always translate.
And you don't always get what you're looking for. Oh, no. I give you that hint. Five cocktails.
There'll actually be six.
Six, oh. Yeah. One on arrival, not with a course.
That's right.
Have you got a favourite of the six?
Yeah, a couple. One of them that I really like is that we're going to make the guests prepare a Regent's Punch. And this is from the 1864 cookbook, English and Australian Cookery, the first cookbook to ever be published in this country that contained a whole chapter on cocktails. And one of the things that it has in it, which is really lovely, is a stabilized or buffered acid, which is a technique that's sort of gone. So geeky bartenders out there would probably know the words acid phosphate, which uses a buffered phosphoric acid, but we're going to, it's a bit harder to track down, but we're going to mess with citric and tartaric acid buffered with some salt. So these are acidic or sour flavours without high acidity. And what we're going to do is combine them, you know, with some wine and some brandy and a few other bits and pieces to create these really complex, amazing flavours that you can't really get elsewhere because they're sort of gone as a technique.
Intriguing
the
stuff.
Powders I'm mixing up.
Oh, that's the right. Powders I saw you mixing. I thought we were getting ready for a cup of tea, a Bex, and a good lie down. Look, it is 17 minutes to two. We have to play a couple of messages, and we need to get one of your mates on the phone because we're going to be talking about the other event that you're involved in at Melbourne Food and Wine, which is the Liquid Harvest. And I'm sure Adam has questions about tequila and vodka and indeed gin. 17 minutes to two here on Cravings on Joy 94.9.
Joy 94.9.
Hi, this is Guy Grossi, and you're listening to Joy 94.9.
Thank you, Mr. Grossi. We are here on a beautiful Saturday afternoon. It's happy hour here on Cravings because we've spoken all things cocktail so far. Adam Sherritt's told us how to make a jack-in-the-box or his version of a pickleback, and you can get those at Feldman's Bar up in Fitzroy on Nicholson Street. We'll come to that in the plug section of the show at the very end. Sebastian Rayburn is here. He's been mixing powders and making some sort of thing over here because he and Cam Smith are doing a beautiful dinner as part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival called the Cocktails of Melbourne, celebrating our 150-year heritage in cocktails and five courses, all part of Melbourne Food and Wine. It looks like a cracking event. But another event that you're involved with well, a rather quiet young man who's sitting on the other side of the country, I believe lousing about somewhere in Perth, more than likely in a beer garden. His name is Jeremy, and he is from, I think, my favourite Australian booze company. Not that I have a favourite, but if I did... And a drink that he makes with the West Winds gin. Jeremy, good afternoon or good morning.
It's still morning here, gents. Good morning. I'm back in the motherland.
Oh, are you a Perth boy?
Yeah, look, I mean, don't hold it against me, and I can use a knife and fork, but yes, I am.
Oh, that's very nice. You could be worse. You could be from elsewhere. Jeremy, welcome to the show. Now, we're talking about a little event that you're involved with the West Winds gin, Tequila Tromba, who we've spoken to on the show before, some really interesting tequila and... a tequila that I really shouldn't be drinking because it does make me go a little bonkers. And the beautiful 666 Pure Tasmanian Vodka, for whom Sebastian is an ambassador or a spokesperson or receiving money from them in one way or another. We were talking before about the Cutlass, which I think is a gift to humanity that can't be equaled.
Look, kind words. I think we've stumbled across something fairly magic about it. I mean, the Cutlass is the sport of the pirates. I mean, as little boys, we all wanted to be pirates, and people said to us that we couldn't put tomato in gin. So in the true rebellious nature of young boys, we did it, and we called it the Cutlass.
Now, it's made with juniper berries, as gin traditionally is, but it's infused with... they are Australian bush tomato. They're a native indigenous ingredient rather than, you know, a tin of SPC tomatoes, which I can't imagine you'd be able to infuse into gin.
Oh, look, I haven't tried it yet, but, you know, it's early in the day. Yeah, we do use native bush tomatoes. Well, look, I mean, the red snapper was the precursor to the Bloody Mary, so I'm probably due one of those about now. But, yeah, look, we use native bush tomatoes. It's lovely to be able to, I think, tip our hat to some of the amazing native ingredients that we do have here through our gin. And, yeah, native bush tomato, it's savoury, it's kind of fruity. It ticks quite a few boxes, if you ask me.
And very nice if you put a slice of capsicum and a slice of cucumber into the tonic with the gin, if there is room for tonic, to pick up the more savoury flavours rather than a slice of citrus.
Yeah, look, I mean, I think citrus has always been associated with gin and tonics, and look, you know, I think gin and tonic's one of the great cocktails in the world, really, but, you know, we use green capsicum. I think it really brings out a lot of the savoury sort of flavours. As Australians, we've been notorious for big fruit-driven drinks, be it wine or, you know, a lot of our drinking's been based around sweet drinks, but finally we're getting the savoury aspects. Look at the European wines that are really making their names around lists around the world, around the country now, like Tempranillos, Barberas, Nebbiolos. We're actually getting what savoury does for the dining palate. And, you know, native bush tomato, I think we've stumbled on something really good, and green capsicum works with it. Jason, the mad genius behind it all, he likes celery, and there's nothing wrong with a cherry tomato in there.
Yeah, look, I'm all for anything that involves savoury rather than sweet, and I'm very pleased to see the demise of Midori and its the red, the yellow and the green ones. Let's talk about this event, the Liquid Harvest, part of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, which kicks off on the 1st of March, ladies and gentlemen, runs through until the 17th of March. And your events are happening at, well, your one event, also on the 7th of March. So a bit of a conflict, I think, for you, Sebastian, which is at the Koi restaurant. And this is, we're going to have a bit of a journey through the homes of the West Wind Gin, 666 Tasmanian Vodka, and indeed Tequila Tromba from Mexico. Talk us through how this event came about. Are you just three booze hounds that got together and had one too many?
Look, I mean, I think there's, everyone's fairly aware of the locavore movement, paddock to plate, call it what you mm-hmm. like, food miles. We've been pushing ahead just through our love of booze, all three companies, but look, we knock on the same doors. It's probably smart to work together. If you look at the Great Australian Infatuation with duopolies, there are always two big companies everywhere. So look, if we link arms a little bit, and you know what, if we can share a couple of wins, share a couple of resources, and provide a bit of service and product to people, then hey, you know, that's what we've got to do, and it's just about keeping it local, really.
Well, Adam, if somebody said to you it's a combination of vodka, gin and tequila, you would say
tequila.
Good morning.
Good morning.
yeah, now tequila being the it's owned by Australian boys, Tequila Tromba. It's not actually made here, of course, made from agave that comes from central Mexico rather than, so almost rainforesty part of Mexico rather than the dry desert with the tumbleweed and men wearing
but
big sombreros.
A lot of altitude.
Yes.
So you although you've got that sort of lush richness, it's also it's still quite an austere environment, so there's still a lot of you know, you get those just like with wine, you get those amazing flavors when you have those sort of stresses on the fruit. So this is a high altitude agave.
Yeah, the lowlands taste so much different than the highlands. Yeah.
Oh, they taste like
they're
petrol.
Just night and day. Yeah. Oh, but it's a great way to wake up in the morning.
There's great tequila from every area, but the highlands is all about those beautiful, rich, soft flavors. Which, you know, for me, which I love sipping Blanco tequila. So this is the sort of tequila I just love to sip. So it's good.
Well, I love to sip gin.
Cutlass.
And if I was allowed to have gin for breakfast, I more than likely would. It is one of my favourite drinks in all the world. So how are you presenting this dinner, Jeremy?
Oh, look, we're going to do it in three phases. I mean, for us, it's about, I don't like to use the term education. I think it all gets a bit serious, and at the end of the day, we are still just drinking booze and presenting booze. But
so it's edutainment.
Edumacational. Look, it's about us providing some information. People are getting a lot more savvy now. People want to learn more thanks to things like the interwebby. So it's about giving them a little bit of history. And, I mean, certainly I think the boys from the vodka company are in a good space because people love vodka, but really there's a lot of, misconceptions about gin and tequila. So it's about us probably there really giving people some background about it, giving them some knowledge, and then actually looking at it in a different light.
And it's also about connecting all of our products to the place where they're made and created, because that's what you're tasting. You know, when you put it in your mouth, you know, with our vodka, you're tasting Tasmania. With the West Winds, it's all about Western Australia. And with Margaret Tromba, you know, it's about Mexico. The agave and where it's grown.
I guess this is takes us back to what Jeremy started with. It's about the locavore. It's about terroir. It's about that place where things are made. And it's about putting, as you say, that place on a placer in your mouth. And I can't imagine how you would put Tasmania in your mouth, but I think one of the special things I like about 666 in particular is, as compared to a lot of the vodkas that come in from Eastern Europe and the US, and Russia, there's a very, very different sense about 666 to what there is from imported vodka.
Yeah, you get a different flavour. It's a really distinctly different style, and that's probably the main reason that I wanted to work with them, you know, quite a few years ago now, was just when I tasted it, was that realisation they're not trying to be a European vodka, they're trying to have those flavours of Tassie, you know, just like West Winds aren't trying to be London gin.
Oh, I was going to say, especially you know, Jeremy, you're not trying to replicate Hendrix or Gordon's or Bombay or any of those, and that's all terribly British. If you take that into account, this is very much an Australian product. It's about the heritage of the product as well, I should think.
Look, it's about the story, I think, you know. If you're going to work hard all week, reward yourself with a bottle of fine booze at the end of the week, be it wine, beer, otherwise. I think people aspire to something a little better and they want to know the story behind it. And whilst I wouldn't speak badly of anyone else's brand, I think, you know, some of the big multinationals, you don't know the story behind it or you don't know really where it's come from. And I think the unique thing with all three of our brands is that... products is that, you know, there are people behind it. You can actually talk to Seb, you can talk to Jason, myself and the boys from Tequila Tromba, Nick and James, and understand exactly where it came from, where the ideas came from and why it tastes like it does.
And none of this, I think that's quite... None of this booze was invented in a boardroom. This is, you know, this is just passionate people making stuff they want to drink.
Well, and to me that's exactly what it's all about. It's the same with food. If there is no drive behind it that comes from the heart, I think the word passion is overused, but if there's nothing that comes from the heart in your food or in your beverage, then that can be tasted, and I think that's how it should be. At the end of the day, it's got to be from the heart.
Yeah, and from the thirst, I think.
And from the thirst. And there we have silence. Jeremy, look, thank you for your time, mate. We'll catch up when you're in Melbourne to come in and give us a bit more of the story of West Winds Gin, because it's one that needs to be spoken about at length, I think, and certainly over a tipple. We might even get Matt Wilkinson in, who I think is your unofficial ambassador.
He's all right, the northerner. He goes all right, the big
he
lad.
He does go
yeah,
all right.
Love to. Gin and tonics on us next time. Thanks for your time, Jeremy.
Oh, brilliant. Good on you. Thanks, Jeremy. That's Jeremy from West Winds Gin. And Sebastian, it's very right, isn't it? That's just all about that heritage.
Yeah, and about the fact that you don't need to have been making booze for 150 years to make good booze.
Well, which is almost contradictory to what we started the program with, so yeah. All good. And Adam, you would agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean... It's funny because it's one of those situations where you notice that just the world over, people—I hate using the word trend—but it's people care about what they're drinking. You know, it's like, and same with food, where you want that story, you want to know, and you know, as bartenders, we can attest more often than not, people nowadays will come to the bar and ask us about these products, and they don't just want a flavor profile like, what's this? It's, oh well, you got to meet this guy Jeremy because he's absolutely crazy, but he is such an amazing individual, and they've created this amazing product. Or, you know, all the crew over at Tromba, same thing. Like, what they're doing is, you know, taking probably one of the most misunderstood products in Australia and the most terrifying product, which is tequila.
Yeah.
And they're finally opening eyes. And you know, I love tequila.
I love tequila. Tequila, I'm not sure, quite
doesn't love you
me, as much. Look, well, let's have a couple of messages. We'll be back to wrap this show up. It's 5 minutes to 2 here on Cravings on Joy 94.9. The boys will be in from Fenderbender after 2 o'clock, and I think Tim is absent, so we have a bit of a virgin host, which I think is going to be great fun. Stick with us right through until 3 o'clock.
Joy 94.9.
Bonjour, I am Gabriel Gatte. You are listening to Cravings with Peter Dillon on Australia's only gay and lesbian radio station, Joy 94.9.
Whoops, I played that twice, but never mind, because we love Gabriel Gatte. Now, I've got some messages. Thank you, Lee, for your messages. I would love a longer show, and I appreciate your suggestion that a longer show would be appropriate. Thank you for that. And we have, boys, a message. Oh, my God, that cocktail dinner at the State Library sounds amazing. When and how much, please? That's Grant from Essendon. Now, we probably can't talk about how much, but we can say when. And, of course, Grant, you can log on to the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, melbourneFoodandWine.com.au, and type in... Cocktails of Melbourne?
Yeah, Cocktails of Melbourne.
So it was the dates again were
the 5th and the 7th of March. So we're doing the dinner twice.
Right. Do you have a conflict with two events on the 7th of March?
No, we have worked that out.
Okay, good. I'm all about the logistics. So, Adam, it's time to talk again, Jack in the Box. So people want to come and experience Jack in the Box, or because you make great cocktails. You are a bit of, you're called the maestro for a reason.
Oh, thank you.
Where did you learn to make a cocktail?
Where did I learn to make a cocktail? In my home. I everyone's got these really magical stories of it, they rise to the ranks on this, and I don't know, I like booze, I like food, I like women.
And you like putting them
bartending
all
together. Yeah, that's exactly what it is. Yeah. And no, it just started as like,
was either gonna be that or you're gonna be a musician.
Yeah, true. Yeah, I was, or a dancer.
You also are quite an avid photographer.
Yeah,
and I do people love can find your photography where on the interwebs?
It just kind of floats around. Mostly, I don't really promote my photography per se, but more my writing. And right. I do a lot of writing with Broadsheet and writing for numerous magazines like Monster Children and things like that. So,
if people want to find you on the interwebs, you have a blog at least.
I do. It hasn't been updated in a while. Maybe it's time to update it.
Maybe it is, because now you could have an audience.
Yeah. It's called The Bird's Eye View. And... it's just thebirdseyeview.blogspot.com.
Put that into your favorite search engine and I'm sure you'll find it. Adam, thank you for coming and joining us and giving us the method behind the Jack in the Box. And
method behind the madness.
and explaining to people what indeed is the Pickleback, of course. Feldman's, 350 Nicholson Street in Fitzroy. Known for...
great pizza, good times. It's like Cheers, you know? Everyone's going to know your name when you walk in there and you can get a Pickleback.
Where else in Melbourne can that happen? Sebastian, the two events, the Liquid Harvest is on the 7th of March at Koi and Cocktails of Melbourne at the State Library on the 5th and the 7th of March. People can find you at melbournefoodandwine.com.
Absolutely.
.au. And congratulations on Bartender of the Year. Come back
thank you.
After the festival and talk to me about that, because we are absolutely out of time. The boys from Fender Bender are in very, very shortly. Next week, I will have back the CEO of the Melbourne Food and Wine Festival, the gorgeous Natalie O'Brien, who will come and talk about free events and cheap events and tickets that are still available, because the festival is but less than 2 weeks away now. So Natalie will come in and join us and just talk about all of those wonderful events that you can find. Thank you, boys. I'll be back next week. Keep yourselves nice. Goodbye.
This Joycast is a free service brought to you by Joy 94.9. Support Joy 94.9 by becoming a member at joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.